On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
For over 25 years, Joe Wheeler was a guest during the Christmas season, bringing a new edition of his Christmas in My Heart series. Joe was seriously injured in a fall that resulted in traumatic brain injury a number of years ago. And after he wrapped up the 30th edition, he has retired from doing interviews, retired from doing any more anthologies. But they're still available online. If you look for Christmas in My Heart, edited by Joe Wheeler, you'll find them. It just seemed like this was a year to look back and listen to one of those wonderful interviews for Joe. So this is from 12 years ago, 2010, with Christmas in My Heart 19. I hope you'll enjoy listening to Joe Wheeler one more time as much as I am. He has edited or written more than 100 books. Back in 2010, that number was a little lower. We'll pick up our interview at that point. Dr. Joe Wheeler is Professor Emeritus at Washington Adventist University in Tacoma Park, Maryland, the General Editor at Focus on the Family, and co-founder and executive director of the Zane Grey's West Society. He has also edited the Great Stories Remembered, Heart to Heart, Forged in the Fire, and the Good Lord Made Them All series, as well as this, his 72nd book. And Joe, does that include your new book for Thomas Nelson, St. Nicholas, or is that 78?
No, that would be the St. Nicholas book would be 73.
Okay. We are mostly talking today about Christmas in My Heart, but Joe also sent me a copy of St. Nicholas from the Christian Encounter series from Thomas Nelson. Have you written any others in this series, or do they use different authors for each ones, or how does that work?
They use actually different authors for each one.
Okay.
And as you may remember, with James Rosenthal, we did one earlier with Thomas Nelson that was a longer book with lavishly illustrated. But this
right.
is one that's a brave new venture from Thomas Nelson to see if a small little biography from the Christian perspective can survive in this cyber world we're living in right now. So I think they have a different researcher, author for each one
okay.
of these other little books.
Well, these are wonderful little books. We encourage you to look for Joe's book, of course, especially at this time of year, St. Nicholas, but also check out Thomas Nelson's website to see what other books are available in this series, thomasnelson.com/org. I'm going to say up front, the Christmas in My Heart series is available by calling 1-800-765-6955, or you can shop at your local Adventist Book Center or go to AdventistBookCenter.com online. Well, all of that done, Joe. Welcome back to On the Bookshelf.
Well, it's always great to be with you, and it hardly seems like Christmas until it happens.
Absolutely. And the wonderful thing about this series is that I'm sure each year you get deluged with wonderful old classic Christmas stories and new Christmas stories. And the happy task that falls upon you is to decide which ones to include in the next collection. And one of the things that you always mention, and reading them bears this out, is that each year it just seems to grow and grow. And there's never a feeling that, oh, well, this wouldn't have made the cut 15 years ago, but now that we're getting a little short, well, okay, we'll include this one. That's never the situation.
In fact, the Lord than good. We have more wonderful stories to choose from now than we did back at the beginning because we've been collecting and buying up old magazines, old books, and people send me their favorite stories in the mail or on the web, and they come in from all different directions. And years ago, at the very beginning, I made a vow to God that I would never coast, I would never rest on laurels, and that if there ever came a time in which one collection would be less than the ones that came before in terms of the quality of it, that he would give me the guts to hang it up. And each year, that my wife Connie laughs at me because I'm always telling her, well, this is the best yet. And we just sent in the manuscript during the last couple of days for Christmas in My Heart 20 for next Christmas. And
wow.
I told her again that was the best. But I do think number 19 was the best at that particular time. And my the way I test it out is when I get the book, the final proof that it exists and it's sent to me by the publisher, I read it through pretending like I'm not me. If I bawl all the way through, I feel, well, we've got a good one. And I did it with this.
Well, there are certainly some wonderful stories in here, and some of them are from some of the authors that we have come to know and love specifically because of this series. For instance, Margaret E. Sangster, Jr. I'd never heard of her. I'd never read any of her works before the very first Christmas in My Heart. And now I've read so many of her stories that when I see her name, I know it's going to be good, and she never disappoints.
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention her name because this is the, I believe, the 12th time in the 19-year history of the series that we have used one of her stories. And during her time, which would have been the first half of the last century, she was one of the most beloved Christian writers in America and well-known not only in Christian magazines but in the popular magazines of her time. And one of the things that has been most rewarding to me when contemporary authors honored me by including me in their book of what they considered the leading anthologist in America, they quoted me as saying that I feel like an archaeologist and that I'm digging around in the rubble of the... and I have the opportunity to bring something more or less back to life. And in cases like authors like Margaret Sangster and Temple Bailey and a number of others, I'm able to take an author who is essentially at the edge of extinction and bring that person back again with a whole new family, a whole new following. And that, I think, is one of the most rewarding aspects of being a story anthologist.
Well, you certainly have uncovered a number of real wonderful gems through the years, and this collection is no exception whatsoever. Since I've mentioned her, Margaret E. Sangster Jr.'s story in this collection is The Hollow Tree, which is just a lovely, lovely story. And like her stories, it's not easy to peg. You know, there were a spate of stories back in those days of orphan stories, and she wrote her share of them. But in all of them, there is always a twist. It's not just a simple little plot of here's a childless couple, here's a couple of orphan kids, hey, we'll put them together, and we all live happily ever after.
That's a good point. I never have felt with her that they're probably a good term for it is formulaic, that
yes.
Essentially she just had a formula and cranked them out. I'm always being surprised by her in terms of, like you mentioned, and this is one of the reasons I so enjoy these interviews with you, because you dig deeper into the stories than most interviewers do, and that you sense that somehow she's not a cookie cutter in terms of how she writes, but in each story that she creates, there is something different about the approach. And that's one of the reasons I think that our readers have come to love her so much.
I think you're absolutely right. Folks, if you're just joining us for this, the first Sunday of Advent and the beginning of the Christmas season, we are delighted to have Dr. Joe Wheeler back with us for Christmas in My Heart 19, available from Pacific Press. And the entire series is available from them as well. And there are many, many other anthologies that Joe has edited and collected. And he's also written a number of original books, and one of them has been brought out and reformatted in a new series from Thomas Nelson, which is called Christian Encounters. It's a series of small books that are biographies. They're about the size of a biography series that I read when I was a young man. When I was a boy, that was the boyhood versions of famous Americans. This is about the same size as that series, and Joe's contribution is on St. Nicholas, certainly appropriate, and based on the research that he had done on another larger coffee table type book, Much of the information that was in the bigger book has been brought into the small book as well. So that's pretty interesting.
You know, before we leave that particular book, it was interesting to me that in order to create a book for the Nelson series, they wanted me to replow the ground. In other words, it wasn't enough to just go ahead and say, well, I'm going to abridge the other.
Right.
But essentially, they wanted something. And it forced me to dig deeper in St. Nicholas than I ever had before. And I think one of the most fascinating things that I discovered this time around was a term that I'd never come across before, the Didache, D-I-D-A-C-H-E.
Yes.
I had never realized that, first of all, that it even existed, and secondly, that the early Christian church, the four centuries after Christ's ascension, that particular Christian church didn't really have creeds. They didn't have doctrine. They trained their clergy in the Didache, which is no more or no less than when Christ was asked what you needed to do to become, to be in the kingdom. He said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy mind and with all thy soul and thy neighbor as thyself. And that was considered the Didache. And early Christians took him literally and trained their clergy that if you live this way, to have that kind of relationship with God, and then to treat your neighbor as yourself, which to them meant service for others. It meant all kinds of, I mean, today's soup kitchens and other things that we do are an extension of that. But when you hear that the early Christian church turned the world upside down in just a very short time, at the time of Constantine, 25% of the Western world there was Christian. It had arrived to that extent. It explains why Constantine felt that other religions were too corrupt to build a lasting Roman Empire on. And when he moved the empire, the capital, from Rome to Constantinople, named after him, it was Byzantium then before, it was because he cast his lot with the Christians because he felt, oh, their moral structure and the way they treat people represent our future. And inadvertently, Constantine did a terrible thing, and that is he made the Christian bishops, he gave them political power. In
yeah.
other words, they became the judge for all things political, and he gave them civil power as well. And of course, any student of the Middle Ages will say, you know, that's one of the things that really corrupted the church more
mm-hmm.
than anything else,
right.
was the civil power that came with it. And so consequently, the Didache as a way of life ended with Constantine. By the time the church had become kind of the in-church, the state church, all of the wonderful outreach that Christians had up until Constantine, I shouldn't say disappeared, but they certainly were greatly decreased. And the reason why we remember St. Nicholas 1,700 years later is because he did try to live by the Didache and giving anonymously.
Yes. And that's the beginning of the story of St. Nicholas. But it certainly is not the end of the story. It's a marvelous story, and the legends that you have found about him, the information that you've been able to find out about St. Nicholas is truly remarkable, because there really was very, very little written, and most of what was written was destroyed in various persecutions, including the last big bad persecution under Diocletian just before Constantine. So there's a great deal of research, and not easy research, that went into finding all this information that's encapsulated in St. Nicholas. And once again, that book is available from Thomas Nelson Books, and you can check it out on thomasnelson.com. On Christmas in My Heart 19, some of the stories that were really nice turns, one of them was Christmas Eve on East Point, which is a story of Christmas for lighthouse keepers, which has a wonderful twist at the end, a providential kind of ending. Who was Russell Gordon Carter? What do we know about him?
You You know, that's one of the most fascinating and most absolutely frustrating aspects about what I do as an anthologist, and that is that most of the writers that I help unearth, nobody knows anything about today. And you look at the biographies, you look at all the resource books you can find, and essentially they were unknown even to their contemporaries, except that they wrote in these magazines for the family or for the church, in many cases even more broadly than that. But they weren't well known. And as you and I have discussed before, I think if I have any legacy at all with I've done 58 story anthologies now, it will be that I don't take the name of the author very seriously, because in spite of the fact that we have used all these stories by Margaret Sangster, if I can't find for the next collection a story that is as powerful as a story by an unknown writer that I've never heard of before, even, let's say, it's a housewife who's never submitted a story to anybody, if the story itself is the only thing that is going to determine which stories make it in. And so, in a way, it's a good thing that I can't find the background material, because, again, it means that I judge the inclusion of the story not because I'd used that author before, but simply because I felt it was the strongest story. Well, and, you know, I turned down, generally speaking, 100 to 300 stories for every one that makes it in.
Wow. You go through an enormous amount of stories in a year making the decisions for the next anthology.
Well, that's correct, but I also have a kind of an escape hatch for myself, because I have discovered that I'm not always infallible. In fact, I'm often not infallible. One you may remember a number of years ago was called Christmas in Tin Can Valley, clear back to Christmas in My Heart 5.
Yeah.
That's one that I thought, oh, that's such a simplistic, formulaic thing. No way will I ever run that story. And then I kept getting so many copies of it in the mail from people, oh, you've got to have that story, that I finally sat me down and said, okay, you chumped, you obviously goofed on this one. What was it that you missed? So I reread it again, and I thought, oh, okay, it's the very simplicity of the story that gives it its power. Hmm. And so we ran it, and it became the lead story, and it's one of the more memorable stories that we have had.
Yes.
So in that respect, I'm always being surprised. And, for instance, there are stories that I may have in the holding pattern, so to speak. They get their finalists every blooming year, but I don't choose them. And I, in many cases, think, well, you know, I better just go ahead and pull those and never look at them again. But I usually don't. I keep them around. And what I discover is that, you know, there's a term in the Bible, fullness of time, that
yes.
I never really took seriously till I got into the story anthologizing. And what I discover is that God has a different timetable than our timetable.
Mm.
And he thinks into the future as well as the present, as well as the past. And God knows somehow, through his omniscience, that there is going to come a book with an interest, with a certain mix, in which this story that I have turned down 17 or 18 different times, I suddenly say, oh, Lord, this is the one that has to be in. And that happens.
Well, there's a really short story in here that actually, if it weren't for the illustration, which, and the illustrations are always priceless in this series, but if it wasn't for the illustration, you practically could put this entire story on one page. And yet, it is such a powerful metaphor of the love that Christ has for us, and that is Jan Keller's story, Patty's Favorite Doll.
Oh, I've got to tell you about Jan. My brother is a concert pianist in Mexico, and
Right.
Has become known around the world, Romaine Wheeler, because of his giving nature to the Tarahumara Indians. All of his proceeds from his concerts go to medical help, dental help, food, and all kinds of other things to the Indians of northern Mexico. And she came into my life through a concert that Romaine gave in the Denver area. And she has since gone down to Mexico a number of times to help out. And I would guess that many of our listeners are acquainted with it's kind of a pickup newspaper called the County Register. I think it's in all 50 states. It gets very much into quilting and craft and so on.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Well, Jan is one of the editors, and she's also picked up a series that I'm doing. I'm blogging on national park lodges and running it in her county register. Well, at any rate, she sent me two of her books, and this was another of those cases, stories that don't have to be long to have it in. And my sister had read it first, and my sister Marjorie, California. She says, "Joe, you got to read Jan Keller's doll story." She said, "It isn't long, but if it doesn't make you bawl, you're not the brother I thought I had." And so I got a hold of the story, and I read it. And then I had another problem, because, as you know, the illustrations are such a key part of the success of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the reason why, they're a key reason why it's the longest-running Christmas series in America that, again, I take no credit for. It's a God thing, not a Joe Wheeler thing. The illustrations you and I have discussed before, most people take them for granted. But one of the things that happened to me way back in Christmas in My Heart, unnumbered number one, you never thought there'd be a number two back then, was that there was no number on the book. It was going to be, that was the book.
That was the book, yeah.
But I was locked into that Currier and I's cover and the old-timey Tear Jerky stories and those old woodcut illustrations. Unbeknownst to me, I was typecast with that first book, and our readers have not been willing to accept anything less. Well, what happened over time, by the time I got to book three, we'd run out of woodcuts. So I figured, well, the good Lord was calling me to something bigger than the classroom, and it eventually he booted me out of the classroom for these books. I had to start buying up old-timey woodcuts that were public domain, 100 years old or older usually. And we have spent between $1.5 million over the years buying up these old, old magazines and old, old books.
Wow.
And then most people don't realize that when I sit down with a manuscript, it's been approved by the publisher finally, I turn over a 6-week period, probably between 100,000 pages and 1 million pages, of just turning and turning and turning 8 to 12 hours a day. And I may go days without a match, but suddenly I'll turn a page of an old St. Nicholas or an old Harper's, whatever it might be, and I'll say, oh, thank you, Lord, that's this story. This particular story of this mangled doll that didn't have all of its arms and feet drove me crazy because I could not find an illustration for it. And it wasn't until the very end of my search that I happened to open a page and I said, oh, here it is. And so when I got a communique from Jan Keller after she got her book, you found the perfect illustration for that little story.
It's the truth. And like we've said before, the illustrations drive home the point, and it's perfect. It looks as though you had it commissioned for the story. There are several other stories. I'll mention them in my review that we won't have a chance to talk about. A really lovely one called A Father for Christmas. That's a post-divorce story.
Oh, that's the one that's been on the cutting floor, so to speak, for 18 Christmases.
No
this,
kidding.
This is the 19th Christmas I've had that one. And until this Christmas, the Lord never told me, Joe, it's time for that story until this time.
Well, it's really touches you. And of course, it, like the others, there's the undercurrent of Christ in them. Even even if he is not central, he is always there, just like in the Book of Esther. The original story that you wrote, and Joe always, if you followed these interviews through the years, you know that Joe always contributes an original short story and closes out each anthology in the Christmas in My Heart series with his own. And this time, it's a lovely, lovely story, and it's called Journey.
That one was the result of my wife, Connie, that's my partner in this ministry. She had only one directive for the 19th book. She says, Joe, write me a love story. Our kids gave us a special present. They, unbeknownst to us, they had a hit list of all of our relatives and friends that had made the mistake of being on our address list, and they got a hold of that and sent communiques out to them saying, it's our folks' 50th wedding anniversary, and we want to send them on a cruise around the Horn that they've always wanted to take from Argentina around to Chile, and do you want to help? So people did, and out of that two-week cruise, when Connie told me to write a love story, I just thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to have a couple that didn't know each other on the same Norwegian ship, and that God would somehow find a way to bring their two lives together, and that's the story of Journey.
A couple of other stories I'm just going to mention because I know we're almost out of time. A Mislaid Uncle, very sweet story. The Christmas Letter, a story of humility. And a wonderful story from Ryan Anderson called A Gift from Pa. And those are my favorite in here, but you're not going to find any of them that you won't like. And you're not going to find any in here that are not going to touch you, and they're just some that leap at me more, but all of them are wonderful, as is always the case. These are painstakingly chosen and prayed over before they're included in each anthology. And it's just our great delight to have gotten to be Joe's friend through the years. And happily enough, we don't just visit at Christmas time because he's always writing other books and other anthologies. So we usually get to talk to him at least one other time during the year. But Christmas is special because that's the first time that we had a chance to share this common love for these kind of wonderful Christmas stories.
Well, you know, The Christmas Letter by Robert Johnson is one that I'd never come across a story by him before. And there's an interesting subtitle to it, the way that God teaches us humility. It also it harkens back in a way to St. Nicholas, the anonymous giving thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we have the protagonist in this story feels that his role in life is to give and not receive. And there are many of us that find it rather easy to give, but terribly difficult to be on the receiving end. And what he discovers in this story, and it has this O. Henry twist ending to it that we won't give away, but this O. Henry twist ending shows that God can somehow shock us into a realization that none of our income, none of the things we own are our own. That if we do not have this giving spirit, God may find an interesting way to bring us to our knees, and that happens in this story.
Well, Joe, it's always a delight to get a chance to talk to you any time of the year, but especially at Christmas time, and this year no exception. Christmas in My Heart, number 19, and once Pacific Press, and once again, or go to AdventistBookCenter.com to get a copy. Joe, thank you again. Give my best to your bride, Connie, and I hope you guys have a very wonderful Christmas this year.
Well, thank you, and may all those listening also have a blessed Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
God bless. And our thanks once again to Joe Wheeler being with us on the bookshelf another Christmas.
Thanks to the marvelous technology of recorded sound. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and on your favorite podcast, which did not exist back in 2010, on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Merry Christmas, and God bless.